Patricia Sylvester is being interviewed as a member of the Women's Overseas Service League San Antonio, Texas unit at San Antonio on October the 22nd, 2003. Pat was born in New York City on June 13, 1936. Ruth Stewart is interviewing. Pat, tell us a little bit about your early life and what got you into nursing and then the military.
Well, I was born in 1936 in Manhattan, raised primarily in the borough of the Bronx. I was an only child of a typical New York family, mixed Italian and Irish. My mother was the Irish side, my father was the Italian side. I wanted to go into nursing from a very, very early age and was fortunate enough to win a partial scholarship to an excellent school in New York, Lenox Hill Hospital School of Nursing, which was a large teaching hospital in the city at that time. Unfortunately, I realized towards the end of my second year in nursing school that I was not going to have enough money to finish the program. So I was probably going to have to drop out and go to work and then come back to nursing school. At that point in time, a notice appeared on the bulletin board in the student quarters from the U.S. Army offering us the opportunity to become PFCs with the grant salary of $84 a month for our last 12 months in nursing school. And it was called the Army Student Nurse Program. I was in the first group of students in that program, and it led after graduation and licensure as an RN, it led to commissioning as a second lieutenant, and 2 years of active duty was a requirement. It was years later when I found out that that time in nursing school, in my last year in nursing school, counted for pay and counted for retirement purposes. Had no idea of that. So even though the West Point graduates, their time, their 4 years in the military academy did not count for retirement or pay, ours did. Don't fight it. There were four of us from New York City that got on the airplane to come to Texas for basic training. We had been given our airline tickets by the sergeant in the recruiting office. Good thing, because we would have gone to Houston. Of course we would have. Where else would Fort Sam Houston be? We got down to San Antonio on a Sunday, and they finally got us into barracks and got us situated. And a couple of months later, we finished basic. And with our bright and shiny new second lieutenant bars on our uniforms, and me, my bright and shiny new driver's license in my pocket, we took off for our assignments, which for me, my first assignment, was in Port Lewis, Washington, Madigan Army Medical Center. It was a lovely assignment, only about 50 miles from Seattle. Enjoyed it thoroughly, and it was there I found out I wanted to be a pediatric nurse. So I went into pediatrics. I had never thought I wanted to be a pediatric nurse. I went into pediatrics, and at that time, the Army indicated to me that if I re-upped for an extra year, I could go to Germany. So I signed all the necessary papers, and 2 weeks later, I had orders for Korea. They were spelling Germany funny, strangely that year. So off I went to Korea, where I was the head nurse on a 76-bed orthopedic ward. You have to see it to believe it. We were in Quonset huts. We heated with kerosene stoves, and oh gosh, it was cold. It was so cold. And we, our duty uniform were the old woolen fatigues, wool pants, wool shirts, etc. What I remember most vividly about Korea was, good Lord, it was cold. But we did have a lot of orthopedic patients. It was an amazing learning experience. It was an amazing experience, period. I had never been around Orientals. I certainly had never been around Koreans. And they were a fascinating group of people. Loved the assignment, really enjoyed it. Did not like the country very much, but enjoyed the assignment. Came back to the United States, and I was stationed in Georgia, Augusta, Georgia.
How long were you in Korea?
13 months.
And that was from when to?
1957, came back in 1958. And was assigned to Augusta, Georgia. At that time, I'm...
Pat, before you leave Korea, could you tell me a little bit about your living conditions?
Oh,
you know,
sure.
Why you were there and what kind of... You're in orthopedic. Keep going about that a little bit.
Well, in Korea, we lived in what we call puchus. They were Quonset huts. We heated with kerosene stoves. I set the hooch on fire one night trying to get the kerosene stove up a little bit more, so off a little more heat. But that's not a heater there. And it wasn't primitive. We had all the medical supplies and equipment we needed. It was just the general stuff that we did not have. We enjoyed a very, very active social life. My roommate got married over there. She fell in love with one of our pharmacists, and they got married over there. And I was her maid of honor. Now that was a hoot, arranging a formal Irish Catholic wedding in Korea. The flowers came from Japan 2 days early. We had to store them in the morgue and told the sergeant in charge of the morgue if anybody died, he buried them under the ground. That was all there was to it. So we had this wonderful formal wedding, and off the bride and groom went. They are now here in San Antonio, Texas. Again, he's retired. They have two children. And orthopedics, the work was very, very interesting and very exciting. And we took care of a lot of Koreans. And a lot of Korean children. We also took care of Turks. The Turkish government had a division stationed in Korea. And we were responsible for the sophisticated medical care of their troops. So we always had a fair number of Turkish patients. There were some problems between the Turkish patients and the Koreans. Nothing led to death, but there were a few near riots. One of the most horrible things I saw over there, we had this man in, Korean gentleman in, who had fallen asleep on the railroad tracks, gotten hit by a train, and had a very severe fracture of his femur. And they had him up in traction, and they had a K-wire in him. And he came to, and he didn't know where he was or what was happening. He was old, and he was disoriented and whatnot. And he pulled his K-wire out of his leg. I didn't know you could do that. And it was about 3 o'clock in the morning, and I'm trying to get this poor doctor out of bed, who certainly did not believe me that his patient had pulled a K-wire out of his leg. Well, that was one of the most awful things I saw, so I couldn't imagine the pain connected with that. We did a lot of very good surgery on the Koreans. At that point in time, Korea was still devastated from the war, and they simply did not have any much medical capability whatsoever, certainly different from today. So we were a godsend to them. I know. When I came home, I went to Augusta, Georgia, and my mother became quite ill and became my dependent. So I asked for and received a transfer to New York City. The only hospital the Army had in New York City at that time was at Fort J. Governor's Island, which was a fascinating place. It's at the tip of Manhattan Island. You can only reach it by ferry. And it's been a military post since before the American Revolution. Governor's Island, the name came from the fact that the Dutch governors of New Amsterdam lived there. So it was a very historical post. It used to be wonderful to go out early in the morning just as the sun was coming up and stand on the steps of the hospital and watch the sun come up over the Statue of Liberty. It was just wonderful to see New York sparkling and clean and beautiful in the first light of morning. I was a general medical surgical nurse there. It was a very small hospital. If we had 40 patients in beds, we were overwhelmed. But it was a good assignment. Really enjoyed it. I had put it, the reality of the situation had hit me in the face quite a while ago, that if I didn't have a bachelor's degree, I might as well forget staying in the Army, or forget doing much in nursing, period. That had not been my original intent, but I'm not stupid. I figured that one out pretty fast. So I was taking courses at Hunter College in New York, and as a city resident, I was paying $10 a course. In this day and age, when you look at the tuition prices for state schools, that is absolutely astonishing. I then transferred to Columbia University so I could get my degree in a fairly reasonable period of time and applied to the Army for what we call bootstrap. It was 12 months full-time schooling at the school of your choice, but you had to complete it in the 12 months. Lo and behold, I got selected and I was off to Columbia University. My travel pay was a subway token. So I finished my bachelor's degree at Columbia University. I'm very glad I selected Columbia. It was a very good program, an excellent program. And I got in just in time because it changed the curriculum, and I would not have been able to complete in 12 months if I had gotten there just in time. So now I'm a first lieutenant going on captain with a brand new bachelor's degree, and the Army sends me on to recruiting duty. Well, I always had a big mouth and I could always talk, but I didn't know anything about recruiting. And in those days, they didn't send you to recruiting school first. They just put you out in the field and said, go talk. And we did. We had a wonderful time. I was stationed in Philadelphia. My mother was with me as my dependent, and it was a wonderful, I really enjoyed that assignment. We had the support of our fellow service nurses, Air Force and Navy. Working with us were excellent non-commissioned officers. And we had commanders, recruiting command commanders, who didn't have the vaguest idea what to do with female nurses that worked for them. Had never had anything happen to them like this before. They were infantry officers. They didn't know what to do with this. So there were some amusing times.
Tell me about some of them.
Okay. We were going out to a school of nursing in Philadelphia, and it was an evening assignment. They wanted us there 7 to 9 or something like that. By us, I mean Army, Navy, and Air Force. And my NCO decided he was from Philadelphia, knew the area quite well, and he decided that was not a safe area, that we could not go out there by ourselves. And I'm sitting there saying, but Sergeant, of course, we got to go out. And he said, no, you don't understand. We're taking you out. And I said, who's we? And he said, the Air Force, the Navy, and the Army NCOs will take you out and we'll stay with you. And we really don't want to hear any lip from you. So here are all these captains being escorted and guarded. It was hilarious. But one of the funniest things that happened was we changed the student nurse program around so that the kids in the hospital schools of nursing, if the school charged them anything for room and board they got military pay for quarters and for food. Now, if you're in a school of nursing that did not charge you for this, you didn't get it, okay? But there was one school in Philadelphia that decided to charge a minimum amount, something like $15 a month or something like that. Well, that immediately changed the kids in the student nurse program pay rate from $84 a month to $300 a month. Now the school was not amused because now half the class wanted to come into the student nurse program. So they were mad at us anyway for another reason I'll tell you about after this. So we went out to enlist the kids that had been selected for their student nurse program for their last 12 months in nursing school. We go down South Broad Street, bop into the School of Nursing, and we are greeted by the director, and she's got everything ready. She sure did. She had the paper flag. It was a Catholic school. I had gone through the checklist with her, and I had said flag, and she had said yes. I had not specified American flag. She was playing get even. So I called around a couple of places and nobody had a flag. And I finally called the local Army recruiter. I said, "Sergeant, do you have an American flag?" He said, "Well, of course I have an American flag." And I said, "Bring it down to St. Agnes right away. We've got to enlist 12 kids. And we've got the media coming and everything else, and I need a flag. You cannot enlist anybody without a flag. You can commission them as an officer without a flag, but you cannot enlist them." So he said, "You want a flag?" And I said, "Yes." 10 minutes later, the Navy nurse says to me, "Come over here." And she's hanging out the window of the school. And she said, "Look, and up South Broad Street in Philadelphia comes my NCO, my sergeant, with the flag over his shoulder, marching down the street. Funniest thing I had seen in weeks. We got the kids all enlisted." But what had tipped the school administrators off before that was these kids that were already seniors and therefore PFCs in the Army, and therefore eligible for all Army benefits, had decided to go to California for a nursing conference. They wanted to go to the student nurse conference. They didn't have much money, so they went over to the local Air Force base and they hopped a flight on the Air Force plane. And aside from the pilot calling me and saying, "Who are these girls? They're wearing these short skirts and they want me to take them to California." And I said, "Please take them to California." He said, "But they're wearing these short skirts." It was the days of the miniskirts.
Huh? What year was that?
This had to be, let's see, this was in the 70s.
Yeah.
Yeah. Okay. And these cute little girls were out there at this Air Force base saying, "We want to go to California. And we're in the Army." And they were wearing short skirts. But the school had gotten very upset because the gals could not get a hop back. They'd gotten to California and they were having an awful time getting back, an absolutely awful time getting back. And of course that was all my fault. But recruiting was a very interesting time, very interesting. Had a lot of good memories from that. And that's where I got my first Legion of Merit. I was the top recruiter, nurse recruiter, in the nation. As I said at the beginning of this, to go on recruiting duty, they pick people who could talk, and I could sure talk. So you want to go on to the next one now?
Sure.
Okay. I then went on to our Army Surgeon General's office, to the Procurement Division, and for that, Recruiting Division, and spent a very, very interesting 2 years there, learning an awful lot about regulations and about military facts and military law, etc. Had a boss who told me that there was always an Army regulation that could tell you how to get what you wanted to do, where it would be legal. You might have spent 10 hours looking for it, but it would be there. For example, we were required, if a patient was admitted to the hospital, we were required to do a TB skin test. Well, very few of them were going to be there 72 hours later to read it, to read the skin test, and it was just a total waste of time. So I spent a couple of hours finding a regulation that said we didn't have to do this on people that were not going to be around to have the dumb thing read. There is, not always, but there is usually a regulation that will tell you you can do what you want to do. Later on in life, when I had more rank and whatnot, I wanted to get my nurse midwives credentialed to prescribe narcotics. You would think this would be a simple thing. But you say narcotics and the world falls apart. And they were really impaired in their practice, not being able to prescribe narcotics. So I found the regulation that said if you need an exception to another regulation, put that in writing and go ahead and do what you want to while you're waiting for the action to be taken on the request for the exception. Make sure you put in your request that you are going to do what you want to do while you're waiting. A little over a year later, I finally got an answer back on that. And it was okay to credential them to give narcotics. It's just part of the games that are played in any large organization. Nothing peculiar to nursing or to the Army or anything else. But the point is, there is usually a regulation that will tell you you can do what you need to do.
You just find it.
Just find it. You may have to spend quite a bit of time looking for it, but just find it. But it's usually there. So, anyway, that was one of the things I learned. At the same time while I was up there, we got hit with the male nurse draft of 1966. Selective Service had decided, without any consultation with the military medical services, that there were 200, two or 300 male nurses in the United States that had a statutory military obligation.
Which was what year now?
It seems to me it was 66. Well, of course there weren't 200. The male nurses either had fulfilled their military obligation before they went to nursing school, or shortly after they had gone to nursing school, or they were not medically fit or otherwise fit for military service. There were very, very few of them who were eligible for a commission. Most of them had fulfilled their statutory obligation. The Selective Service came out with issuing these letters to all these guys who, no way would they be eligible to come in the military. You know, they could barely move without crawling on all fours. I had the director from the school at Albert Einstein School of Medicine saying, I will give you anything if you will get this guy out of this. He is my senior instructor in this area, and I have to have him. There were a couple like that, and there was one guy that nobody wanted. You wouldn't have wanted him on a bet. And we used to call each other, Army, Navy, Air Force. He's on his way to you. He just left me. Lock your door. Turn out your lights and whatnot. Fortunately, this sounds terrible, but I'll say it anyway. Fortunately, he turned up to be a diabetic. And even with the relaxed medical fitness standards for medical people, doctors, nurses, and whatnot, he was not eligible being a diabetic. We used to say under those relaxed medical fitness standards, if you could see lightning and hear thunder, you were medically fit. But anyway, we had this awful go-around while Selective Service was trying to find 600 guys who simply did not exist. Which brings up the ones who did exist but were graduates of two-year associate degree programs that none of the military services accepted at that time. And we were all going, oh, no, 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 no. And I was up in the Surgeon General's office at the time. So I remember the, oh, God, go away, go away, go away business very well. We were forced to take these poor souls. And it wasn't their fault. It really wasn't. We wouldn't let them go overseas. We wouldn't let them do anything that would involve extending their two-year tour of duty. We wouldn't let them work nights alone. We wouldn't let them wear the Army Nurse Corps caduceus on their uniform. We put them in a strange insignia. And then we wondered why none of them wanted to re-enlist. Can't really blame them. A couple of them did take advantage through the GI Bill of the Registered Nurse Student Program and went on and got their bachelor's degree and then came back into the Army Nurse Corps. But most of them were very unhappy with the military services. And it really wasn't our fault. It really was Selective Service. Can't believe how funny that was, Ruth. then there was the saddest thing in the world that I had to do while I was there. A gal from Scranton, Pennsylvania, that had come in through the Army Student Nurse Program, and I had commissioned her before she came on active duty. And then she'd gone to Vietnam with her best friend, and she got killed in Vietnam. And I had to go see the family. And that was one of the hardest things. And the family asked that I stay over and go to the mass because her best friend was bringing her remains back from Vietnam. That was one of the hardest things I ever had to do. First of all, we had to figure out how to get her best friend as her escort officer because the policy had come out that the bodies of the dead would not be escorted back from Vietnam, by people from Vietnam. The escort would be picked up in California. Well, this best friend had lived across the street from her, had gone to nursing school with her, et cetera, et cetera. So I called the chief of the Army Nurse Corps. I got the assistant chief of the Army Nurse Corps. Hey, I'm a little captain. I don't normally call the chief of the Army Nurse Corps. And I said, I don't know what to do. The family has asked me to arrange for Lieutenant Drasba's best friend to bring her body home. And I don't know how to do that. And there's nobody here in Scranton, Pennsylvania that knows how to do that. And Louisa Sasco said to me, she was the assistant chief of the corps. She said to me, Captain, you don't worry about a thing. Tell the mother and tell the father that the best friend will be with Carol. We will make sure. Now, it may delay things in California a little while, like 12 hours, and it did. Carol's body was about 12 hours late coming back. But her best friend will be with her, and she was. And that was really wonderful, I thought. We really went out of our way to honor the request of the family. But it was a very, very difficult time. It was very, very hard, because Americans were certainly not used to seeing their girls come home in body bags. So, and of course, the school was devastated. The school was draped in black, because she had just graduated, you know, six, eight, 9 months before. Mm-hmm. So they all still remembered her quite well. But again, you know, Americans were not used to their daughters coming home in body bags. So, where are we now? Okay. After recruiting duty, and after my tour in the Surgeon General's office, I went down back here to San Antonio for the Army Medical Department's career course, which is a 6-month course to teach you how to be an officer. And the 4 missions of the artillery. Let's not forget the 4 missions of the artillery, or the 10 classes, or the 8 classes of supply. Could probably to this day still rattle them off. That was a fun time. It required no exertion of intellectual power beyond the ability to memorize. As I said, the 4 missions of the artillery and the 8 classes of supplies. After that, I went to Vietnam.
How long then? You were here 6 months for that. Uh-huh. And then Vietnam.
Now, because I was a pediatric nurse, they gave me a children's hospital in Quang Tri. Yeah. I was 12 miles from the DMZ, demilitarized zone, with the surgical hospital, as assistant chief nurse at the surgical hospital, and the chief nurse of this 3-ward thing that was a children's hospital. The Marines had built it and then left, and gave it to us. We were the only child care facility within the 3-province area, and a province would correspond to a state. So people came from all over with their dead and dying children on their shoulders. And they waited till the kids were almost dead, because we had to look like we were from Mars. And besides, we were only 12 miles from North Vietnam. So they probably considered that was dangerous to bring their kids to us. We had how many beds was it? 45 bed pediatric unit. 3 wards. First ward was communicable disease and contagion. And when you saw it, it made sense, because so much of what we got in was bubonic plague, and other god-awful communicable things, contagious things and whatnot. Saw quite a bit of tetanus of the type of the newborn. We didn't know what the heck we were doing with that. Neither the doctors or the nurses had ever seen tetanus of the newborn. We had no idea what we were doing with that. And a lot of other things that we had no idea what we were doing with. One of our docs, Army doc, was Haitian-born, American-educated, but Haitian-born. So he knew French, thank God. And he could communicate with the families of the Vietnamese kids. The one ward was in intensive care, one ward was what we would call convalescent, and that was manned entirely by Vietnamese nurses. I hired and fired them, and the Marine Corps paid them. And then the third ward was jointly manned with the Vietnamese and the American nurses. Our job was to bring them up to something resembling 20th century standards. And that's not to mock them or to minimize their dedication or anything like that. But let's face it, they simply did not have the wherewithal to be at our level. It was an amazing experience. Did not see that much combat injuries. Probably only about 20% were combat related. So an awful lot of awful orthopedic stuff. TB of the long bones. And things like that. Awful orthopedic stuff. Saw an awful lot of congenital stuff. For some reason, even a search of the literature didn't help us with this one. For some reason, the Vietnamese population has a great deal of hair lip and cleft palate in newborns. And of course, if the child is defective, they just let the child go in a corner and cry his way into God's hands. Because what do you do with a defective child? And the miracle was we could do the hair lip. We couldn't do much about the cleft palate. We didn't have that type of surgical capability. But the miracle was to make that kid's face look fairly normal, reasonably normal. The difference in how the parents approached their child after the surgery was just astonishing. And it wasn't that they didn't love their children. They did love their children. But reality settles in here, gang. So we saw an awful lot of that and an awful lot of encephalitis. Had one kid, he was 12 years old, came in coma. 2 months later, he woke up speaking English. Strangest thing. One morning he woke up and said, "I want chocolate." And after that he just went gung-ho making up for his 2 months of sleep and not eating. It was an amazing thing, absolutely amazing. Because the kids were so charming and adorable, and because they were such innocent victims of this war, even if they were there with meningitis, which really probably had nothing to do with the war, they were very, very appealing. And the American GIs were very, very good to us, very good to us. Because it took me months to get supply channels established. They kept telling me, "You can't have that stuff. It's not an item of issue in a combat zone." I kept telling them, "This is not my idea to put me in a children's hospital in Vietnam. I need this stuff. And I will get it." And we did get it, but sometimes it took a long, long time. But we had some amazingly innovative people on staff who could come up with what we needed to have out of the damnedest things, like coffee cans will serve amazingly well to make weights for the police, the traction and whatnot. So, it was just amazing. Also, it was where nurses did an awful lot that in the States is restricted to physicians, and corpsmen did an awful lot of what in the States is restricted to nurses. You did what you had to do. And that was that. And of course, we had the GI patients as well. That broke your heart. It broke your heart to see a 19-year-old kid dying in front of you. And you were sitting there holding his hand, waiting for him to die. It just broke your heart. It broke all of our hearts. So 12 months later, I came home.
And that was what year?
That was 70. We had heard all this stuff about, being insulted when you're wearing a uniform and whatnot. Well, now, even given the fact that we were female, and that makes a big difference, we were treated pretty darn nice. I got off the airplane in New York, LaGuardia, and I was a day early. So my family got out of bed, got into their car, and was coming out to get me. So I'm sitting outside the airport, and it's very early. It's about 7 o'clock in the morning. And I'm sitting on my duffel bag, and it had been a very long flight in from Vietnam. We had been flying for a long, long time. And this man comes up to me. He's in a business suit. And he says, "Hi, can I talk to you?" "Hey, I'm a New Yorker. I don't talk to strangers." "Why, are you crazy, mister?" And he said, "No, I notice you're wearing a nurse's caduceus. Are you just in from Vietnam?" And I said, "Yeah." And he said, "And I see the duffel bag." And I said, "Well, yes, I am." And he said, "I was in Korea. Can I keep you company to whoever you're waiting for gets here?" And I said, "Sure, sit down." So he shared my duffel bag with me. But for a New Yorker to do that with a stranger would be unheard of, but anybody would have mind. So anyway, then I had Vietnam out of the way. Where did I go after that? Oh, I came back here to San Antonio, Texas, to graduate school. And I was enrolled in the Army Baylor Master's Program in Hospital Administration. It was a two-year program. 1 year here in San Antonio, academic year. And 1 year was a internship, residency rather. And I had the luck of the draw. I was selected to go to Letterman Army Hospital in San Francisco for my residency. What a wonderful, wonderful sight that was. That was a delightful year. And I was the only resident, so I got all the choice assignments and whatnot. And that was really good. And I lived across the bridge in Marin County, and I could look out one of my windows and see the Golden Gate Bridge. And I had never paid so much money for rent in all my life, but I knew it was only going to be for 12 months. So I went for it. So now I have a master's degree, and now I have my combat experience out of the way. And I am selected to go to my first chief nurse's job. No, excuse me. I was selected to go to what the Army calls a utilization assignment, where they're going to make use of you after they give you your master's degree. They want to make use of all that knowledge that is new and fresh in your head. So I was assigned as an Army Inspector General, IG. I was the Army's first girl IG. And it killed me to take my nurse's caduceus off, my uniform, and put Inspector General insignia on. Just killed me. I couldn't believe this. Yes, they wanted me to take off my identity. Spent several years, and our job was to inspect medical facilities. Hospitals are very funny places. You can find the darndest things in hospitals, going on in hospitals, and you just fall down on the floor roaring. And of course, if you're a nurse, you know you're going to find something in some of these areas, if you just look hard enough and long enough and warm enough. And then everybody would just fall down on the floor howling. And we would fall down on the floor howling. Just had a wonderful couple of years. All the other people on the team were medical service corps officers. And they could not believe some of the things that we came back with. Yeah, we do believe they have IV tubing in a wooden box down there, and it's from World War II, et cetera, et cetera. So we went on and did our job there, made many friends and some enemies.
What were some of the funny things you found besides your World War II IV tubing?
Okay. Postpartum clinic, combined with a little baby clinic, makes sense. Except when you realize they're doing the speculums in the dishwasher. They had not been able to set up a reasonable arrangement with central material to build the speculums. And they had this huge workload. It was here at Fort Hood. They had this huge workload. So they did what any normal head nurse would do. They figured out a way to do it. and the way to do it was to use a dishwasher. And after I stopped howling laughing, I said, that makes sense to me. I'm trying to think of some things that were funny, but that wouldn't get me in trouble if anybody was listening to it or knew what I was talking about. So, without naming names or naming places, there was the installation and the hospital that had decided they didn't have enough ENT doctors, sufficient number of ENT doctors to do all their TNAs. So they were using their radiologist. And the way this came out was a couple of their enlisted corpsmen from the operating room had come to the IG complaint period because they thought something was really wrong that this guy was doing TNAs. And he had a PhD, so he was wearing a name tag that said doctor. And everybody fell right into this. Well, I knew these two poor little gals that were OR techs. I sent them on their way, telling them everything would be fine. I grabbed the team chief and said, don't wait supper for me, I'll see you later. I went charging off to the operating room because I knew the word would get back real quick, and they would hide the surgical log. I would have hid the surgical log. Found the surgical log, Xeroxed everything. Sure enough, he was. Went down to the wards. The wards thought he was a physician. We took this to the commander the next day. I thought the commander was going to flip out. He was not a bit amused. He did not know it. Chief of surgery did. I thought he was going to flip out. Now, that was not a funny incident. That was a sad incident. Funny incident was the guy you've been in the Army for years and you've always waited to meet. You know he exists out there someplace. And he came to see me at one of the installations. Again, I was holding the IG complaint period. This guy comes in. And the Army wants to throw him in the stockade and court-martial him because he was AWOL. But he wasn't really AWOL. He had finished basic and had been told to go home and await further orders. And he had done just that. And home was this little town in Alabama. And he kept trying. You know, he would come over to the post periodically and go to the post personnel and say, I'm still awaiting orders. And they would say, go home and await orders. His pay was coming in every month to him and whatnot. And he was plowing the back 40 and awaiting orders. Finally, a year later, the Army noticed that he wasn't in Thailand. They came looking for him. Now they want to court-martial him. And, you know, it really wasn't the kid's fault. He had tried every reasonable way. Did he go out of his way to get him noticed? Probably not. But he had done everything reasonably to be expected. So we took care of that. But I said, soldier, sit down. I've been wanting to meet you for years. Finally met the soldier who was told to go home and await orders. And a year or two later was still awaiting orders. Finally met him. We would get things like that. Well, after my IG period, I went on and I started becoming chief nurse of hospital. Started off at a delightful hospital in Maryland at Aberdeen Proving Ground. Very small, very nice. Everybody's very comfortable with each other. We didn't do anything dramatic or anything like that. We were just there and we kept occupied and we enjoyed the place. And I went on to other Army chief nurses jobs, always a little more intense and involved, and finished up my career as the chief nurse of Fitzsimmons Army Medical Center right outside of Denver. This was a very prestigious assignment. I was delighted to get it, and I loved it.
So how many years were you in the military all told?
Counting the time in the student nurse program, 30 years in 1 month.
And is your experience in the military affected the way you think about the military now, that now you think about the military or war?
Oh, sure. I could no longer say to anybody why don't we go in and finish up that war there, you know, just kick a little butt and want, get it over with. I've seen the results of going in there and kicking butt. They don't have legs. They don't have arms. They're blinded. They're devastated. Or they're dead. So I'd rather not go rapidly off charging into the sunset without thinking this through.
You've had an interesting career in the military.
Fascinating career in the military.
Interesting life. Mm-hmm. And I certainly appreciate your sharing this with us for this review.
It's been my privilege.
Thank you very much, Pat.